All right, we're going to call to order. Can we do roll call, please?
Chairperson Simon.
Here.
Commissioner Charette.
Here.
Commissioner Chang. Here. Commissioner Clancy.
Here.
Commissioner McLean.
Here.
Commissioner Roberts. Absent. And Commissioner Vesey. You have a quorum.
That Commissioner Roberts delivered a sign name grant on March 19th.
Okay, is there any public comments? Okay, great. So hey Mark, we're going to do commissioner reports and then we'll get to you. Is that okay?
Fine, take your time.
Good idea. Hey, Mark, actually, we're going to go right to you. Thanks for joining. So we're going to switch on the agenda, commissioner reports and community solar and benchmark enrollment. We have Mark Pruitt on the line from the Illinois Power Bureau. Mark is, knows a ton about sustainability in general and works on all kinds of projects. What's relevant to this conversation is he has really been kind of the head consultant on all things community solar. If you guys remember, we asked Mark to join us because we had a lot of questions about adoption and enrollment. So this is our opportunity to ask Mark questions. And Mark, if you have anything you want to lead with, go for it. Thanks for joining again. Appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure. And, I commend the commission and staff and the time and attention you've dedicated to getting your program launched. The feedback I've received from Sarah is that there's a desire to move the enrollments further and to have greater uptake within the community. And I've been working on a few concepts on what has worked in some other communities, and I'm happy to share those with you tonight. And if there are items that you'd like to amend or pursue or disregard, we're happy to take it whichever direction you at the commission deem appropriate.
Great. All right, do you want us to start with some questions for you?
Certainly.
All right.
Hi, thanks for being here, Mark. I'm Beth, one of the commissioners.
Hello, Beth.
Can you hear?
Yes.
Final question I would start with is just understanding role of us as a commission and our residents in driving first sign up for the reservation and then conversion to actual enrollment versus the role of MC Squared, right? And what are the incentives for MC Squared and what will they already do? And then what can we do to supplement that? Because as an individual, having gone through the process of signing up, I have a lot of like in the weeds questions about things that I think might be stumbling blocks for people. Mm-hmm. And from the stats that Sarah has shared, we seem to be right in line with other communities in terms of sign up, but we have a lower conversion. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know what the solutions are, but I just want to gain a better understanding, right, of the context that happens.
Sure.
And the experience that you and other communities already have.
Sure. And I think that's a completely fair assessment that part of the challenge with community solar as it's constituted today, and let me just take a broader view. Community solar is allowed by state statute, was first promulgated through the Future Energy Jobs Act back in, I believe that was 2016. Fast forward to most recently, we had some amendment and changes at the state level with the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act. So everything we do at the local level has to comport with not only that state statute direction, but also the tariff that Commonwealth Edison has placed around community solar, which has a certain number of rules. Those rules have been approved by the Illinois Commerce Commission, so we're bound by those. And then lastly, and probably most importantly, in terms of what everyone on this call would be touching, are the marketing rules that have been promulgated by the Illinois Power Agency. So So with that, I think what the breakpoint is of those on this call today versus what MC Squared does exclusively is I think that the community itself is very much on the front end on the customer acquisition, education, and engagement side. That's because your community doesn't know Mark Pruitt. They don't know Chuck Sutton or anybody at MC Squared. What we found is that when communities lead and communities have done the due diligence to say, this is a good program, residents respond very favorably to that. Just looking at your response rates, I'll just give you a quick, for instance, looks like you have a response rate, initial response rate of about 2.6%. I can tell you from other direct mailers that have been sent out by vendors directly without the municipal logo or participation, that response rates are somewhere in the 0.1 to 0.2% rate. So the mere fact that your municipality is sponsoring the program, I'm sorry, I'm getting some feedback. Is that on my side? Oh, I can keep talking. I just didn't want it to be distracting for everyone else. Oh, okay, great, thank you. I'm sorry, hearing myself is awful. The response rate is higher when municipalities are sponsors, right? So I think that you've taken the great step of sponsoring the program. I think what people on this call could do is maybe think about additional channels of outreach within the community to repeat the message. You know, remember, this is new, and this is a new way of doing it. And this whole community solar process reminds me of back in 2010 and 2011, when consumer choice for electricity purchasing became possible. It's very limited pickup until the municipalities really got involved on municipal aggregation. So I think it's going to be the same situation here. We'll start to see more uptake as we see more familiarity with the concepts. Now, where MC Squared manages the process, and just to be clear, MC Squared is hired as a program administrator. So they can answer lots of questions. They're great people. I've worked with them for years. But they and I view this as your program. So once you have directed a customer to us, we try to make the process as drag-free as possible. It is not perfect, but this goes back to those requirements at the state statutory level, tariff, and the marketing rules. MC Squared is responsible for moving the customer through three primary elements, and I'm not going to be exhaustive here, but the first is to provide them with the background that's related to their community solar subscription agreement, which is the agreement with the community solar farm. They also need to walk them through notification to ComEd so that ComEd knows that this account needs to be receiving these credits and these amounts from that community solar farm. So that's the second. And then third, we need to provide a notification and documentation to the Illinois Power Agency as part of their rules to ensure that the customer was provided all the necessary information. So because there are so many forms to fill, I think that provides a little bit of drag. And that's where you start to see fall off on conversions. I think also, sometimes people see something and it looks like a great idea. Maybe it's 10 o'clock at night. And then when the enrollment form shows up and it has a different name, it's MC Squared is on that email. Maybe they start to think, maybe this isn't what I really wanted. Maybe I have some more questions. Maybe I'm embarrassed to ask those questions. You know, hopefully people will continue to ask questions and move through the process. But MC Squared is responsible for responding. So when an inquiry comes in, they respond. They also, if they don't get a response back from that initial communication, they do, and I validated this with Sharon Allegato, they do periodically reapproach those customers 2 and 3 times. The sensitivity here is that we don't want to turn this into a sales type activity. We try to be respectful and let people know that, hey, this opportunity still exists for you. But if they don't respond, there's nothing that, at least in our management structure, would really allow us to move forward with calling them directly and trying to close the deal. That just isn't something that we've contemplated because that just doesn't feel like a municipal program. Willing to take advisement if you think we need to be more persuasive with residents, but I think that I would just really strongly consider thinking about that in the context of how does that look from a municipal standpoint. Then as we get deeper into the weeds into the transaction, the filings, the billing, those all are more or less exclusively on the MC squared side of the equation. MC squared handles the billing, which I think is another drag on the transaction. I think that based on how we have to handle the billing now, I think some people are concerned about making an auto pay. I think that they're concerned about sharing their banking information to set up that auto pay. So I think we have a certain amount of dropout at that level. And then on the ongoing billing and customer care, that's on MC squared. And then I intercede on there to just monitor the situation and ensure that if there's any escalation of issues or questions from consumers, that those come to me. So that's the kind of the span. I hope I'm being responsive to your question. What I would say in terms of what would make this better, I think that there's a proposal and I believe a timetable that Commonwealth Edison has set forward and the ICC has ordered, where the utility is to, starting in June, start providing what they call net billing. So right now the process is the subscriber gets 100% of the bill credits, and then they are billed separately by MC squared for 80% of those credits. So that's the need to have auto pay. ComEd has indicated and filed the tariff that they will step in, and instead of putting 100% of the subscription credits on the bill, they would put, in the case of your residents, 20% of the bill credits. So by only putting 20% of the bill credits on that bill, when the customer pays the remaining amount, part of that remaining amount payment that comes from the customer to ComEd now includes the 80% that of the bill credits that were going to go to this to the community solar farm, and ComEd will issue that payment to the community solar farm. So hopefully starting in June, we haven't seen the paperwork yet, but once it's available, our intention is to move all existing accounts and all new accounts onto the net billing process. And that, I think, will cut out one of the major steps in the transaction that I believe give people pause and cause drag in the enrollment process. So I'll just stop with that and happy to give more detail.
I want to give other people a chance to talk, but just to respond since I asked the questions first, that is fantastic news.
Please, we're very pleased. We're very pleased.
Because it also makes the explanation of what's going on so much
easier. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you've eliminated a bunch of my questions.
Oh, okay.
And the two other questions I would say are, you know, for us, you may not be able to answer this right now, but maybe afterwards Sharon can look into it. Why is River Forest conversion rate lower than other municipalities, right? Like our sign-up rate is actually on par or even better than other municipalities. That's something, I don't know, we're only like at 30% conversion. Understandable, you're never going to get 100%, but is there something we can do or is there some reason why our municipality's conversion rate is lagging behind others? And the other big picture question I have is when we embark on something like this, I like to be kind of goal or outcome oriented, but I don't know what is a realistic goal, right? Like mm-hmm. by the end of 2022, we want to have X percent of our household signed up. I mean, I don't know, right? And for MC mm-hmm. squared and for Illinois Power, do you have like a larger goals that municipalities are feeding into? Or is this just like we're putting it out there and seeing how many people up? Like what's the goal?
Right. Well, to answer your first question in terms of what the how to up the conversion rate, you know, I think that what we could do on our side is we could really pin down with MC squared what they hear from customers in terms of why they would not sign up. they get some of that feedback, right? Other people just go silent, but they do have some of the feedback. So what I'll do is I'll take it as a task to get from them just a quick pie chart that says, you know, of the reasons why people choose not to pass through to the full subscription, what are those reasons? And have them give us a breakdown of what they record from their customer care center. So let's start with getting some of those numbers and not guessing on this. Maybe, you know, if we see in there that some people, let's just say that 15-20% of the residents who did not pull the trigger on getting the subscription, they said, it's because I was concerned that I didn't understand the program, or there were some details that I just didn't quite understand. Maybe what we could do, because an email is a necessary part of the signup process, maybe MC Squared, and we could test this out with River Forest, I'd be willing to invest the time. Maybe we could invest, maybe we can invite those non-converted folks by email to a Zoom session where we do a little bit more in-depth Q&A. Maybe we have a resident or two, some champions, right? Some people who've gone through the process. So it's not just Mark Pruitt saying this is a good idea, but it might be some of their peers, neighbors and friends could be largely influential. So maybe we could take that extra step and say, hey, you know, MC Squared can send the email and say, we've noticed you haven't signed up or completed the process. If you have any questions, we're gonna have this Q&A session available on Zoom or do it in person, whichever you like. And we're happy to answer any questions, right? This is meant to be a good thing for you. If you have concerns, let's address the concerns. So that might be something that we could do that is an active response. But I think getting to some of the numbers in terms of you know, why people don't convert might be helpful as well. You had another question in there. I'm sorry, I didn't jot it down quickly enough.
Well, that was a very helpful answer to the first question. The other question is, goals, you know, what are the Illinois Power Agency's goals, and then therefore what goals?
Well, the Power Agency, I don't believe, has any specific goals for our program. We didn't know what the response rate was going to be. We felt that the highest response rate ever was probably going to be somewhere in the 20% range, because that was the highest enrollment level that we saw in opt-in municipal aggregations. Those are municipal aggregation programs where people had to affirmatively sign into the program. So we felt that that was a good benchmark for us to aim for on the long scale. So what we have set up for that would be fantastic, right? But we know we have to build to that. So to be able to support that and not overextend ourselves, what we have done is structured a supply chain. And we went through our procurement process with the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus, and we selected suppliers who would give us the 20% going to the vendor. They would pay for the marketing fees, and you know, they had minimum performance standards and the like. And we ran our procurement and we said, well, look, we got 12 projects. Let's see if we can fill them up. And as we get to, I think we're at about six of those projects are filled now. As we get closer to, I think our trigger point is seven of the projects, we're gonna run another solicitation to bring in more volume on the supply side. So we don't have a specific goal, but we always wanna have a cushion above and beyond where our portfolio is. So that's our approach, because it's kind of unknowable from our standpoint what the goal would be. Now, if you'd like to have a goal, maybe that could be part of the marketing plan, right? And maybe that builds some bandwagon effect and builds awareness. And maybe that's part of the messaging that we could put out to the residents. But again, it has to come with your approval.
Thank you very much. That's good stuff.
Thanks, Beth. I have a question, Mark. Just generally, and you kind of touched on some of this a little bit, but are there best practices that you're seeing from other communities, clever things that they're doing that you could share with us?
Sure. So those communities that have the highest conversion and response rates, I think, are those that use the direct mail and repeat the direct mail, right? People from a marketing perspective need to see things especially new things, 5, 6, 7 times before it sinks in that, hey, this is available and this is something that maybe fits for me. So I think planning subsequent mailers makes sense. Municipalities that have started to push the messaging through their other means of communication with their residents has also been good. So newsletters, websites, reports to the board, which get covered by the press, friendly press coverage, and you know, other types of municipal communications. They've really done a very good job at you know, putting it on the Twitter feed for the village, those types of things. I think also in some municipalities, they have looked at doing really targeted outreach to special sub categories of their residents. So we're working with one of the communities now where they really want to go after their small business community. And so what we've done is we've printed up little door slicks, little sticker, and there's going to be a directed campaign to through the chamber of that municipality to all the members. And you know, if they sign up for community solar, we're going to give them a little recognition sticker that can go on their front door, their front window that says, "Hey, I'm 100% community solar." You know, and those types of things sometimes can be very helpful because it raises awareness. The only recommendation we made was to put a QR code in the sticker so that residents who see that can click on the QR code and be taken to the information page for the municipality. Some of the municipalities have done who have departments that deal with lower income or elderly populations. They have requested program materials for when they meet with those constituents because those constituents might be on fixed income and the program might be well suited for them in terms of higher benefit. What else? Some municipalities have said that because they have signed up their own municipal facilities, that has lent a little bit of credibility to the offer to their residents. So some of the residents have said, well, if the municipality is doing it, maybe it is a good thing. So I think that those are kind of a raft of concepts. There's undoubtedly others, but those are the ones that we've observed so far.
That's really helpful. Thanks. Eric, can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah, of course.
Do we have, how many different ways can you get electricity? Like, how many different programs do we have? Do we have 5? 3? 5? It's a lot, right?
Well, yeah, it depends on how you count them, right? So everyone's going to have to help me out here, and Mark actually probably knows this better than I do. But so through ComEd, you have regular power service. Mm-hmm. You have variable pricing, mm-hmm, service. We have aggregation as a community. We have community solar. And then of course there's individuals can generate their own power via rooftop or a third party program, buying credits, anything like that. That.
Mm-hmm. So is that typical? Oh, is there another one, Susan?
Then you can.
Well, within community solar, I mean, we're also, well, actually, no, I think this is community. I think these are recs. We also get solicitations in the mail for, you know, vendors that the village hasn't recommended.
Yeah, third party. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So does that add to the confusion also when there are so many? I mean, yeah. I'm a resident. I'm confused. You know, I hear these things.
I mean, when, you know, and we've talked about this before in this commission, but mm-hmm, when this first came out after FEJA was passed, which Mark talked about, I think we've pretty much at this point trained residents to throw out anything that comes to their door, probably including our mailer, because there was so much noise, mm-hmm, around, independent companies trying to sell, various, green energy packages. So yeah, I think, Carrie, I think that's part of the problem.
Right. So how do you get over that? Because then you just get fatigued and you do the easiest thing, which is probably nothing.
right? And, you know, it's kind of a now versus later situation that it could be in the future where the rules change and maybe municipal aggregation contracts could, or that authority to automatically enroll residents into community solar. Maybe there's a legislative change that could allow that, right? That would be great. We're not there today. So dealing with it today, you know, your challenge is, well, how do you compete with all those other options? Well, of those options, ComEd doesn't advertise their supply. So really you're not competing against them per se. You are competing against all the other retail energy suppliers, and you're dealing in some communities with door-to-door sales of community solar. I think the advantage that you have, and you know, maybe this is too generic, but because you do have the moniker of the municipality, having done its due diligence and selected and endorsed this program, I think that is your real differentiator. I think also the level of cost savings for your residents is actually pretty good. We saw some offers recently in the south suburbs that were only offering 10% being retained by the consumer. So I think that you compare favorably there, but people need it to be really simple. And, you know, look, you can save 20% and support solar development in Illinois, right? In the end, I think that's what resonates with people. To my mind, and I'm not a marketing expert by any means, but to my mind, that message has to be repeated a number of times before people get it.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question? Hello, Mark. My name's Susan.
Hello.
So you mentioned signing up municipal accounts as a way of encouraging residents to sign up. And Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems that Sarah looked into this and for various reasons, we did not qualify. You said one exceeded the capacity.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess I'm surprised by that because we're a relatively small village. So if this is something that you're recommending, how could we be too big?
Well, the program that we have is structured for residential and small commercial accounts. Small commercial accounts is a rate class in the ComEd tariff that is identified as accounts with less than 100 kW of peak demand in the prior 12 months. That's kind of engineering talk for something smaller than a McDonald's restaurant, right? That's about what 100 kW means in electricity consumption. I can tell you in most of the municipalities that have done this, there's very few accounts that kind of fit that profile and are not on what's called franchise account. Franchise accounts are municipal accounts that essentially receive a zeroed out bill from ComEd. And that is done because the ComEd is compensating the municipality for the use of the easements and rights of way within the municipality to service the residents, right? So it's not ComEd's money, by the way. All your residents are charged that fee. So I see some heads nodding. So you've heard this before, I won't dwell on it. What we have suggested to some municipalities, and some are considering this, is moving away from the franchise account structure to a direct payment system called the infrastructure maintenance fee. We work with Evanston, other city with an E. We moved all of their franchise accounts over to paid status, and they did it for the reasons of being able to put those accounts under a retail energy supply contract that included renewable energy credits, which was a priority for their sustainability program. The same could be done by any municipality that wanted to then put those accounts on community solar if they so. So, you know, I think that's going to be, that can be something. Moving into the future, and Sarah, I don't know your portfolio, but you may have some accounts that fit the size, that don't fit the size range and are served by a retail energy supplier. One of the other changes that came about in the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act is that, again, starting in June, we'll see if they hit this goal, but the utility is to provide bill credits to all accounts, regardless of size, regardless of whether they're served by a retail energy supplier, on an equalized basis. So maybe moving forward, we could put some community solar subscriptions on your existing retail supply accounts, and you could gain the benefit there. So, you know, we still need to see the details of how that works out, but I think that those might be two options. You know, one is definitely easier. You know, waiting until June to maybe get a community solar subscription placed on, you know, a large village account that is served by a retail energy supplier, that sounds really simple. Moving from the franchise to the infrastructure, you got to pass an ordinance, there's math, you know, but if that's something you wanted to do, we could talk about that as well.
So in the first option, is that something that will be offered through ComEd?
The bill crediting for all accounts? Yes, yes. That will be offered by the utility. And that goes right along with that net billing, that net crediting feature that we discussed a little bit earlier when Beth had her queries.
And then I have one other question. I'm going to refer to my personal account, but the reason I'm asking is just to know, is it true? So I was one of the first people that signed up so I could sort of follow this and see how it works. Well, first of all, I was discouraged from signing up because they said my electricity consumption was very low, and I wondered if that's something that they do to other, you know, if that's part of the drop off between the wait list and the you know, sort of the email sent out is what they say on the top of the offer sent out. But then also, and I've just started, so maybe this will change, but it seems like the credits are not amounting to the full amount of my energy use. And, you know, and I did check to, you know, go back to the previous year to see if it differed, and it didn't. And so I'm just wondering, is that like a startup kind of issue, or from the beginning, should those be meeting your full, you know, so like part of it's coming on the supply side, part is coming from ComEd and part is coming from the community solar program?
Well, I haven't seen your billing statements, and I'd be happy to run through and take a closer look. But a couple things to just bear in mind. For community solar, it's not an automatic, put it this way. You're not, in community solar, you're getting a percentage of the electricity generated by the community solar farm. That farm generates more electricity during the summer months, less electricity during the winter months. So it might not always match up very well from a pattern standpoint with your consumption. So that might be one thing that you're identifying.
There's a seasonal element to it.
Correct, okay. Correct. So one thing to just give some clarity on that, when we take an account and we say, okay, we want this account to have a subscription, how much of a community solar farm should this account have? What we do is we take a look at your annual consumption and we match that up with on an annual basis with output from the farm, so that we can't match it up month to month, but on an annual basis, it ought to be very close. So again, I don't want you to be discouraged by any means, but if you'd like us to take a closer look, I look at bills all day long. So that's my job. I'm happy to do it with you or for you. So you please let me know how I can help. Or if you'd like MC Squared to do that, they do that same type of mechanism as well.
I mean, knowing this, I can be patient. It's just, I wanted to make sure that what I, you know, if I sign up my friends, I want to make sure I have an answer when they ask me.
Yeah. So the main thing to remember is the 20% is you're retaining 20% of the bill credits. So those bill that might be some very quick math that you can take a look at your bill and say, okay, am I getting 20% of X? If it's only $20 this month, am I getting 20% of that? That would might be that first threshold issue to address. The next one is the seasonality issue, and when you started might have a real bearing on, you know, right.
Any other questions from the commission or Trustee Gillis?
I don't have any questions, but I appreciate your time. And I thought some of the ideas probably pretty practical and implementable.
Well, you know, again, we don't just say this just to say it, but this is your program. It belongs to the village. I view myself as a technical resource and MC Squared as a transactional facilitating resource, right? I mean, hopefully those that have signed up, you know, I hope the sign-up process, with it being all electronic, was easier than if you try to do it yourself. I can tell you that the first accounts we signed up before the electronic platform, we had a stack of about 45 pages of paper that had to have executions in six places, I think, to do a subscription. And it was painful. So I know we've made progress. It's not seamless or as accelerated as I think it should be. Part of that's due to regulation, and hopefully that'll improve over time. But hopefully those that made it through, it wasn't too arduous. And we always take constructive criticisms as well. So if there are things that we could do better, we're more than happy to amend it and make this program more customized to what River Forest leadership as well as its residents require.
Mark, this is Beth again, just mm-hmm. final comments. What you said about the forms, one thing that would probably be helpful is I think it's good to let people know if you sign up, this is what's going to happen. You're going to be auto-billed, which now you're not going to be, which is great, but that in order to complete the enrollment, you should expect to sign a bunch of forms. And then maybe it was there, maybe I missed it, but like, you know, very short sentence blurbs that explain this is, you have to sign a form, like you said tonight, because this is whatever required by statute, and like three sentences that explain what you're signing, right? Because we all mm-hmm. know that nobody's reading all that fine print, and I clicked it all on the face of my work on this commission, and many people will be deterred by that.
Right.
What I looked for was the provision that said that I could cancel at any time if I wanted to, right? So there might be things on the MC Squared website that could kind of highlight that and give a quick summary of you're going to be asked to sign three forms and what they're about. And then the other is just, Eric, I'll let you work out with Mark when we might get, or Sarah, you know, when we might get the report on the reasons why River Forest residents are not convinced.
I just have one comment. In the report, if it's possible, could we get the reasons also why the people, like our latest numbers, 105 signed up for the wait list and then 89 were eligible. Could we get the reason why those 16 people were not eligible? Just so we have a handle on, because that's sort of the first place that we're losing people.
Yeah, that is, those are absolute numbers that we can get. We don't have to guess on that because those qualifications are known and people fall into different categories. And when someone isn't qualified, they're notified of the reason why. And so that's something we can definitely put into that report alongside of, you know, commentary from the call center in terms of why people don't convert. So we'll have those two separate reports for you.
I was thinking one reason, I wonder if people are on community aggregation, would they be told they're not eligible or?
Whenever someone is on the aggregation program, they're informed that to be part of the program, they need to be on the default rate. And they're told that, you know, you could leave the program at any time, and this is how you would do that. They're not automatically disqualified, but they are retained on the wait list until they make that change in their account status. If they're on hourly energy pricing, it's the same issue, because being on hourly energy pricing reduces the compensation of the value of those bill credits. If they're already on net metering, that is also something that has caused some challenge in the past. We're reevaluating that. That the challenge in the past has been under tariff, if someone had solar panels on their roof and they wanted to engage in net metering, which means get a credit back for the extra electricity that they generate and send back to the grid, they had to have a system that generated no more than 110% of their prior year's consumption. So if you have a solar array and then you bring on community solar is also net metering. And the combination of on-site solar and community solar still together had to fit beneath that 110% threshold. So that is another reason why maybe someone who has solar on site might not qualify for the program. However, again, ComEd has lifted the 110% threshold, so that constraint will go away starting in June.
Just to understand, so why would a person with rooftop solar want to go into community solar? Because they're not generating enough electricity to cover their use?
Usually when a household has solar on the roof, it's the same issue that they're not necessarily generating in the same pattern as their consumption. So there's always going to be a little bit of residual electricity that's going to be delivered from the grid. And, they'd like to cover all of it, right? All solar all the time. And I understand the vision and the objective. It's just that transactionally, it's become difficult because of the 110% limit.
All right, Mark, we really appreciate your time. I know it's late night, not ideal, but we appreciate your expertise and continuing to guide us. So we'll let you go. Thank you so much.
Thank you, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was super informative. That was great. I'm glad we did that. And a lot of takeaways, like Jeff said, there's super clever marketing things that we could think about. So we'll digest this and make this an agenda item, I think, for a future meeting. Kind of figure out what our kind of phase two push is for community solar. Okay, so why don't we kind of jump in and do our commissioner reports. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. We do have to approve the minutes first.
Yeah.
Beth, I know you had a change.
Yeah, I had one change, I emailed it to you just to kind of a clarification of the wording in the final section where it said that I think I was responding to some comments Susan had made about the waste contract, and hopefully I'm not changing the substance of what I said, but just making the wording sound a little. So my proposed correction. That paragraph is Commissioner Cheng stated that she also appreciated Commissioner Charette's comments, but noted the commission did not link its recommendations and commitments. She stated that the proposal makes good progress in some key areas, and while there could be more focus on waste reduction, the commission is also trying to.
Any other changes?
Could you just tell me what DU, the sustainability, a member on the DU Sustainability Committee? What
Dominican
is the
University.
Dominican University. Okay, thank you.
You should write that out. If
let's go ahead and move forward with the adoption of the meeting minutes.
Need a motion and a second.
We have a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
We have a second.
Second.
Okay, thank you. We'll do a vote. Yes.
Commissioner Charette.
Yes.
Commissioner Cheng.
Yes.
Commissioner Clancy.
Yes.
Commissioner McLean.
Yes.
Roberts is absent. Commissioner Veazey.
Yes.
All right, now we'll jump into the commissioner reports. So just as a, we're 45 minutes already into the meeting, so let's try to be as efficient as possible so we can knock off some of our agenda items as well. So I'm just going to go in order on my screen here. So Carrie, do you have an update?
I don't. I'm sorry. We had our new grandbaby, so I'm sorry.
That's awesome. Don't be sorry. That's awesome. Congratulations. Maggie?
I do not have a new grandbaby, but I do not have anything to report.
Considering her children are young, that's probably. Yes.
No, I don't. I see the Soul Smart is on the agenda. I think that would probably been the only thing to discuss. So.
Susan.
In the interest of time, I'll be super brief here. I did attend Planet Green. I don't think there's anything that so relevant to River Forest, we can't skip over it. I also attended the last of the academic year of the Dominican Sustainability. And the only thing I'll say about that is during Earth Week, there's going to be a showing of a film there, April 21st at 6 p.m. The name of the film is The Ground Between Us. So it's one of the Good Earth, One Earth Film Festival. So if you miss that and like to go, that's a possibility. And then the other thing I would mention is I was at the village board meeting last night when listening in on the discussion, and there was quite a bit of discussion on the composting program, and specifically a threshold that was added in about if composting reached 51%, then we would talk about opt-out composting. So there was kind of a lively debate between three former sustainability commissioners, right in from Julie Moeller from out of town, Katie Brennan and Lisa Gillis. And yeah, basically, I think we're all interested in bringing down the cost. So, and well, just because we're on it, I just wonder if I can ask a question here to Sarah. So just to be clear, so the people that are currently on the 65-gallon program automatically, their fee will drop from the current $20.87 to $15 without any action on their part, right?
Yeah, it will. And we will, once the program's approved and official, we'll notify the people who are currently in the program to let them know that, one, either A, your rate's going to be dropping, or two, if you'd like to
change your size,
yeah. you can.
That's good. Thanks, Susan. Beth?
The only meeting that I attended was also last night's board meeting, and in the interest of time, I also try to be concise. I want to say for the record, first of all, thank you to Sarah and Jeff and the Village Board for supporting, really weaving sustainability in through the new contract. I am really excited about the new electronics and hazardous waste being included in the contract and some options for the compost. About the two items that were discussed at the board meeting last night, I think I just want to kind of make a note about a couple of process issues. I know that there were a lot of moving pieces with this contract and it was on a tight timetable. I just want to observe that if provisions like relating to waste things, like if the commission had known about those provisions beforehand, we might have had a opportunity to comment on it and kind of maybe settle things before the board meeting. But I know there's a lot of things going on, so hard to keep, every detail in front of us. But more importantly, I think for future process, what I want to do is make sure that, I feel like I need to be more educated, I need to be more alert, but we're all doing a lot of things. But now we have this great contract, this great foundation. There's a provision in it buried under the miscellaneous provisions of 20W that specifically says that there will be an annual review of the compost program and that the commission should be involved in that. So I just want to make sure we put it like on our agenda and figure out who's going to work on it. Because personally, I know we all want to increase compost, but there's actually a lot to it. And I'm not sure I know enough yet to say, well, I think we should do this or do that in order to boost it, right? We should also receive the reports that our LRS is going to be giving under the contract of volume of pickups. And we should receive them and we should review them. And we should say, okay, what are our goals and how do we get there? I wanted to say.
Charlotte, anything?
Been a bit of a busy month, so I don't have any big updates. I wasn't able to attend the OPRF Sustainability Committee meeting, but I had friends who did, and they were able to, draft sort of plan that they presented to that board, and I think I'm not sure exactly what the timeline is with that, but they're optimistic about it. Also, Ellie texted me. She wasn't able to come today, but she wanted to ask about yesterday's meeting if everything was approved and voted on. Is it good? Oh, dang. We'll let her know.
Do you have any updates?
I was just being asked. Basically, okay, so I'll go back. So
The vote was postponed so that we could draft new language to address some of the concerns that the lawyer has already said would be cosmetic. But if it's important, we will, you know, certainly do that. But with those two issues addressed, one regarding the threshold, and the second being adding an option to have a day where waste outside of that collected on a regular basis could be taken away, will be addressed at the next meeting. So the village, all the trustees have been asked to provide their own input on the wording, and I think ultimately it will be up to Jeff and Sarah and probably our lawyer to figure that out.
Just two things quickly. For those of you in the composting program currently, hopefully you received an email last week notifying you that Public Works will be delivering compost beginning week. Everybody get?
I got the email, yeah.
Oh, next week. So we just need to know your address and contact information and the amount you're requesting in cubic feet. And then I do have a quick question for the group related to the village's tree inventory. In terms of removals and plantings, I understand this is something that the commission's tracked in the past. So just let me know what information you need and who needs to receive it.
You mean on be specific, that would be like trees on the parkway?
I think it's related to the carbon in. Shannon's been working.
You could give it to me and I'll pass it on to Shannon. And so basically you're just going to say like how many trees were planted over like the fiscal year or something, or you're not sure?
That's what I need to know. So if you
need to know what we need to know.
Right, exactly.
Gotcha.
Yep, you can just send me an email.
Okay.
And I can get that information to you.
Thanks, Susan. All right, let's move on. Continue discussion regarding the draft single-use plastics ordinance.
Okay, so you have a revised ordinance for your review this evening. I did speak with the village attorney about including plastic bags in the definition, and my recommendation to you is to separate that out, the reason being that the village could adopt an opt-in plastic bag ordinance that would apply more broadly across all village businesses rather than just the narrower focus of food establishments. So that language is included in the ordinance.
So just to provide a little more color on that, right? So the reason they get sticky is because this is specifically for food establishments, but that does or doesn't include like Walgreens.
Right. So the example that I gave is say you have a customer who is purchasing a food item at Walgreens. They would, if plastic bags were included in this ordinance, that would be considered to opt into the plastic. But the person behind them, if they're just purchasing like a magazine or something, that wouldn't apply to
what,
their
what
purchase.
What if you added the word prepared food? That would get rid of the Walgreens and the CVS's.
Potentially. So I know that
they still all have that stuff. Walgreens has the packaged sandwiches. And
no, but that's what I mean by prepared, like
prepared
on
fresh.
Site. Yeah, prepared on site.
I don't think they're prepared. Oh,
no, that's what
point?
I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
We could differ. So a restaurant would be prepared on site. You know, a sandwich in a cellophane thing is not. And that would, you know, That would be a way around it. I'm not saying that that's ideal, but it would just be a go around.
So the other option is to draft a definition of like what types of businesses are included and which types would be excluded. So included in the packet materials was a list of businesses that currently have some kind of food license. And so you can see that there's things like Walgreens or convenience station or convenience stores. So we could just look through that list and see what do you want, what do you not want, and then the village attorney can draft language to incorporate into the ordinance.
Sorry, so I checked you a little bit. So where are we at right now? So right now we have We have the opt-in single-use plastic ordinance as a standalone ordinance. We did not include plastic bags in there. So do you need the commission, though, to review this? And
right. So my recommendation to you is to take the plastic bag piece and do that separately, because then it can be applied across the village.
So I happen to agree with that, but, you know, I think everyone probably needs a chance to kind of review all this, just because if we try to, it feels like we would be kind of jimmy-rigging the plastic bag thing into an ordinance that doesn't really quite fit it. So if there's an appetite from the trustees and the village to consider a plastic bag ordinance, if we do it separately, it could cover every plastic bag that's handed out in the village, which is what we ultimately want. So I too would support the idea of separating these two.
And then just to be clear, it would be similar in this vein as an opt-in ordinance rather than a ban or a tax.
Fee. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't think I understood that last part. I mean, I agree that the issues should be separated. Isn't this ordinance about the food articles, utensils of eating? It's an ordinance that says, when you're saying opt-in, you mean whoever the customer is opts
right.
in.
Right. They don't hand you a plastic bag. You can ask for one.
Too many uses of opt-in and opt-out.
Right. So the plastic bag ordinance
yeah.
would be
Yeah.
Would
so
be the
I
same.
Think where we are with this is that I think what Sarah's looking for is, are we good enough with it such that the next step was to get feedback from any of the businesses, right? Mm-hmm. And from that point of view, I'm fine with moving to getting I guess it's fine to put this paragraph in here that elevates the visibility and makes certain that we are directed to look into this plastic bag thing. I find it a little unusual to have that be in the ordinance. It seems weird to me, but, you know, if that's where the attorney thinks that it belongs, that's fine. It just seems odd to me. It's like if you stuck something in the ordinance saying, we're doing an ordinance about B, but in this ordinance, I guess they're sort of related.
I think the reason it's included the way it is you're effectively asking the board to consider this and to direct the commission to look into this issue.
Yeah, this is not, you know, sometimes we act on things that, most of the time we act on things that the Village Board of Trustees asks to do. This is the opposite. We're asking the Village Board of Trustees to consider something that we're coming up with.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it did come from the village, so that's weird.
Can I ask something? So the outcome of this is that every business would then have to say to a customer, like, if I'm ordering food, do you want utensils? Is that effectively what would be happening? The businesses would say to the, do you need any utensils or napkins?
Exactly, Carrie. And that's what the online apps also already support, where you have to click the box if you want to have
right.
utensils included in your order.
Right. And then, it's their choice, the business's choice, if they're going to do that or not.
With this,
no.
With this,
so the opt-in is the client, the customer opting in to it for it.
Correct. Okay. If this was to be the pass as an ordinance, every affected business would have to conform to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about enforcement. So it doesn't say anywhere how this will be enforced. I was recently in Chicago. I was all excited. I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to ask me if I want a fork. No, they just gave it to me. So we pass this. How do we enforce what?
Really, it would be enforced the same way any other ordinance is enforced in the village. So if there is a complaint, then we go out and investigate. Go through the adjudication.
We'll have to troll around the restaurant.
I think we'll have to go eat out a lot.
We'll have to go
like
a lot of field trips.
Is the understanding that the village board does not have an appetite to ban plastic bags? Is that what I'm hearing?
No. So it's it's more of a legal issue where the village is a non-home rule community, which means that there are the we have certain limits to our authority. So we cannot implement a plastic bag ban or a tax.
But this somehow gets around that?
Was that, Carrie?
This gets around that? This is not part of that? I mean, how does this get around that?
It's because it's an opt-in. So it's the customers can still receive it. They just have to request it, essentially.
So because it's a ban, because it's not a ban and it's not a tax, forms to all the esoteric rules of home rule.
Which there are many. Non-home rule, right?
Non-home rule, excuse me, yeah.
Okay, well, I don't want to prolong this discussion, but just if we can't, for the single-use plastic bags, and we can't do a tax, then this thing that says we're going to make recommendations about recommendations, what it would be the same.
Right, and again, the distinction is that by doing plastic bags separately as their as its own ordinance, it can apply to all businesses rather than just 20 or so that are on that list.
Any other questions or comments on this? Or what do you want our process to be run?
The question would be is if everyone's available for the May meeting, then we can invite businesses to the May meeting for their input.
So we talked about that at the last two meetings. Is that okay for us to bring businesses? That would not be on the plastic bag opt-in. That would be on the single-use plastic.
And then the other thing that we need to do is have the summarized key findings in there as well. That doesn't necessarily need to be in there for the next meeting. However, it should be in there once the commission makes the recommendation to the village board so that the village.
Great. Good. Let's get this to the business. Now, if you guys get a chance, also make sure to read over Sarah's memo in the packet. And if you have any questions between now and the next meeting, just bring it up.
I guess one question that the business will just be like sent a notice.
Yeah, so we'll send a letter out directly to their mailing address, and then we'll put it in the village communications as well.
And we have enough time between now and on that, right?
We're going to at least 3 weeks. So that means I just need to make sure it gets out next week.
We put together that list. Good job. Was that you, Sarah?
We just ran a report. Llama, which is our permit software, Llama.
Because it's based on permit.
Nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, number seven on our agenda, discussion consideration. First one is to suspend tall grass weed regulations for the month of May. Yep, go ahead.
Okay, so this was a request that came out of the Community Wildlife Habitat team, which is basically based at Roosevelt. Something that science teacher Corey Cadillac came across. So it's an initiative to address the decline in bees and pollinators. It began in Appleton, Wisconsin 2 years ago and had really remarkable results. The request, and this is the first year I follow this stuff pretty closely, and this is the first year that I have seen this, the importance of leaving leaves in flower beds, of leaving stalks, because basically all of the insects and the butterflies and that's where they're resting until it's consistently 50 degrees during the day. So not just like, oh, one hot day, okay, let's get rid of all the stuff, but consistently, like, I guess basically no more frost. And so in this experiment, they found that both the quantity and the diversity of bees increased amazingly. There were 3 times higher bee species richness, and I think that refers to diversity, and 5 times higher bee abundance. So, you know, really remarkable results for a pretty low effort. But in order to promote this, I just want to make sure that nobody was slapped with a weed ordinance. And I would mention, especially with such a late spring, I mean, it would be unlikely that anybody's lawn would hit 8 inches, but, you know, it is possible one little thing could rise up. I don't know. So, you know, just, you know, basically, Sarah asked about residents versus commercial. I can't really imagine a commercial venture being interested in this. So I think we could, at least for the first year, restrict it to residents. And so just wondering what you all thought about that.
So, and just to add more color to that, so we wouldn't be, you know, so we would basically suspend it up until 8 inches, right? Or would this actually get rid of the...
No, well, we wouldn't get rid of it. We would just say during the month of May for people that are following us, it wouldn't be enforced. But no, we wouldn't change the ordinance because it's just for 1 month.
We wouldn't enforce the ordinance for the month.
Right.
Of
May.
Just not, no enforcement for 1 month.
Gotcha. Is there precedent for this? Like, is that...
There are precedents and other. This is what other municipalities are doing. They're waiving it for me.
I'm not sure about in the village here, but I did run it past both our code enforcement officer who saw no, and then also the village attorney who gave some guidance on how the board can adopt it.
I think this is cool, Carrie.
No, I read that Appleton study too. I think I forwarded it to you, Eric, also. And I didn't know that we had this ordinance. I was already doing it. I was already knocking them on my line, so I didn't know that that existed. But no, I think it's a great thing if we could move, you know, and maybe do some kind of article. I don't know what the calendar is, Beth, but something in the newsletter, you know, promoting something like this too.
I think it would be good for a weekly newsletter, maybe for the first week of May. To just sort of...
yeah.
I think it's the kind of thing that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, learning. And so I don't expect that the participation would be amazing this year, but we could just kind of launch it and then, you know, build up and promote it. And also the Community Wildlife Habitat would promote it. And maybe Carrie could even promote this on the Healthy Lawns to just, as a reference.
Are there any concerns about this? I think it's super cool.
I think it's cool. Is there like signs or something so like you don't have to explain to your neighbors?
I think that's a good point because I have what one could refer to as a natural lawn. I think there are other words for it. And I routinely go around and apologize. And I thought this year I was going to change my tune. And instead of apologizing, I'm going to go around and say, you know, what are the benefits of doing what I do? Like, and most of my neighbors say, like, you know, Susan, you be you.
Like, is this something we could get out, like, in a,
yeah,
you know, in like the yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And
just saying, hey, if you see that your neighbor's lawn is tall, here's why.
Yeah.
There even can be a link to the Appleton study and things like that. Be cool.
Yeah, there's some resources in the study as well for signs that you can download and print.
But Jeff, I think another thing you can do is you can just tell them, like, you know, don't sit around. You know, I think the fear is some people are going to think that your neighbors are going to think you're lazy and just didn't get up. But I think if you just tell them, say like, hey, you know, if you notice my lawn getting a little long, and this is why I'm doing it, and this is the result I want, and there's, you know, all kinds of articles about, you know, the decline in the number of bees and other beneficial, you know, pollinators and insects. And so we have to start changing our habits and behavior. And that's what I would say. It gives us a little more platform for doing it, you know. And I think some people, you know, like Kara was going to do it anyway. Some people are doing it anyway.
So how do we officially make a recommendation on the
language in the memo here? I can read it and someone can just say so moved and second, and then we can take
it. You had both you had weed and grass, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So motion to make a recommendation to the Village Board of Trustees to suspend enforcement of weeds and grass height regulations for residential properties during the month of May.
So moved.
I'll second.
Oh, Eric.
So Beth, is there anything in the newsletter? Is the schedule full up?
No, it's not. Let me just go back and take the official vote real quick here.
Oh,
Chairperson Simon.
Yes.
Chair Charette.
Yes.
Commissioner Chang.
Yes.
Commissioner Clancy.
Yep.
Commissioner McLean.
Yes.
Commissioner Roberts is absent, and Commissioner Veazey.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, so, Carrie, I don't know if you heard Beth's answer on that, that there is.
Yeah, I'd like to get to the communications calendar later in the agenda.
Okay,
oh.
We'll hit it then. So 7B is a recommendation to pursue solar panel text amendments. Sarah, can you explain that? Because I can't.
So as we were working through the SolSmart Silver process, we do have enough points for silver, but after a few rounds of discussion with both of administration staff, our village planning consultant, and SolSmart, we are unfortunately unable to obtain the designation without amending the village's zoning code as it relates to solar panels. So SolSmart requires the use of the term accessory use in the letter, and the village's zoning code, which governs accessory uses, does not currently contemplate solar panel systems. So staff has been approving them or these types of permits through the interpretation of solar panel systems as appliances. So they really have not been denying permits. However, in order to the process to amend the code is called a text amendment, which involves a public hearing with the Zoning Board of Appeals, and staff cannot bypass the process and declare solar panel systems as an accessory use in the zoning designation letter that is required for SolSmart Silver. So there are two options available to move forward on this. One option is to wait for the village's zoning code overhaul, which is planned for fiscal year 23, which begins on May 1st. Option two is the commission can make a recommendation to the village board to proceed with a standalone text amendment.
That was my point of view as well, and I you know have talked to some others as well that we would there's a desire by numerous people, including our trustees as well as our village president, to achieve SolSmart, next level of SolSmart. In order to do that, we need to keep moving this thing. I also agree that I want to handle this outside.
And further consideration, I would recommend a hybrid, which is that for immediately we do exactly what SolSmart is asking us to, no more, no less. And then as part of the more well thought out, that solar is brought in there and thought of in a much, broader terms. But, I would say just facilitate this to get the, so just do whatever exactly they're asking you to do. But then we have a bigger discussion around solar as part of the
it's a good point. So first of all, we have to prove to the SolSmart program, like we have to show them evidence that this was changed and it's now accessory use. So we do have to go through the official process. One thing,
instead of laboring it out and saying, what about this? Just
get it done.
Just do exactly the letter of the law.
There's one thing I asked to also get, to go in there, which is battery, because I'd like to be proactive, because a lot of people who are at this point who are installing solar also want to install batteries, and I don't want them to run into all kinds of, again, they're not denying permits right now, but like they could, because I doubt a battery is, I don't know if it is or not, but it's probably not an accessory use either. Probably not even in the
It's probably not in the.
And a battery is also a generator, which might, provide some other complexity. Anyway, so that's the only other thing that I asked. If we could throw that in there and it wasn't going to upset the apple cart, great. If it does, then we'll just take it out and move forward just with solar being recategorized.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely in favor of the text amendment. And I think that the other benefits, and Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the by actually going ahead with the text amendment instead of the letter, I think that checks one of the goals.
It does. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a requirement. So,
yeah, so sort of we'd be taking care of that. I think we'd mm-hmm. still, there's, I was just double checking. There's, oh, the 3-day turnaround. So there might still be some other points we need, might still need to like get the language about turnaround figured out to get gold, but this would be like probably the biggest hurdle. So yep. be good to get that done. Well, yeah,
yep.
we need to get to silver. I think it was written as the letter has to state it's an accessory use, and then to gold is it has to be in the.
And just to back up a little bit on the whole PhilSmart process, like we've, you know, the we've had enough points for silver more or less,
mm-hmm.
except we just didn't have these, you know, like, you know, zoning type things that we couldn't do. So we're actually pretty close to gold with just some other, you know, other changes that we would need to make and other things we would need to do. So that's what Jeff was alluding to.
Okay, so just I want to make sure I understand this because I don't know anything about it. So you're just saying if we're going to do this, meet the gold standard while doing it so that we don't have to go back and redo it? Or you're just saying that this is part of the gold standard as well?
Kill two birds with one stone, right?
Yeah, we'd be getting we would still have to prove there might be some legwork still on showing that we've qualified for the other points,
okay.
either by what we've already done or making some tweaks or updating websites, that stuff. But it would be much easier than, like, I think this would take care of, like, kind of the major needing village board approval, needing a.
I have not looked at all of the gold requirements, but having it codify, having solar panel systems codified in the zoning code is one of them.
So we may as well hit them both.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one other comment, not to get mired in the mud on this, but I think if there is a review of the zoning, I think wasn't the in CEJA there was supposed to be this. There's going to be an implementation where there's going to be recommendations of like best practices or an actual like master zoning plan that you could villages could follow. I guess maybe whenever the time comes, we might want to flag and try and think if possible the timing of whenever that's implemented at a statewide level with whatever we're doing locally. So we're not using, you know, a bunch of resources and time and then find out the last minute that they're implementing a program we'd like to follow.
That's a good point. Any other questions or feedback on this? Can you actually read the text, please?
Motion to make a recommendation to the Village Board of Trustees to proceed with a text amendment related to solar panel system. And that would be included in the text.
Motion to approve.
Somebody want to second that?
Sure, second.
Okay, let's do it.
Simon.
Yes.
Commissioner Charette.
Yes.
Commissioner Chang.
Yes.
Commissioner Clancy.
Yep.
Commissioner McLean.
Yes.
Commissioner Roberts is absent. Commissioner Vesey.
Yes.
All right, motion carries. Well done. Well, we're getting a lot done today. It is 8:20. We're just going to kind of keep motoring through here to number 8, which is tree regulations research.
And why I'm actually here today. It is specifically to represent a resident who reached out and is advocating for stronger tree regulations, specifically related. This comes from personal experience, and importantly, this resident has volunteered to help lead something, but it would have to be more than new to this. But basically, she's caring for her oak trees, and her neighbor wants to cut down a lot of those trees because the canopy goes over her neighbor's swimming pool. The thing with oak trees, which I never knew, is that if you don't cut them down at the right time of year, you introduce tree wilt, so you oak wilt. So you must cut them. You must trim them in the winter, or you will spread the disease. Right now, the only code in the village that I can find is that all residents must prune their trees with a certified arborist. They don't qualify or prescribe a time of year. Also, I think that there's a lack of education with regard to residents actually understanding what trees do for us. There's a lot of new folks coming from the city. This is totally anecdotal, but the neighbors come from the city. They were just going to bring out their, these neighbors happen to own real estate in the city. They were just going to bring out their guy to start chopping. So the good news is this ended on a good note. After a lot of adversarial conversations, the neighbors decided that they'll split the cost of doing a tree trimming at the right time of year with a certified arborist. But it does kind of bring to bear the fact that there probably needs to be done more in the village. And this resident did cite the fact that there are municipalities, Washington, D.C. is one of them, that has designated a tree of a certain age as being a heritage tree where you are forbidden to cut them down. And in fact, if you do, there's a hefty fine. In fact, there's a fine in D.C. that's now being enacted, and a tree was cut down $50,000. So these are not insignificant fines to maintain heritage trees. We might not want to go that far, but at the very least, I think we need to have, you know, at the very least, potentially investigate what other municipalities are doing, understand the current tree canopy outside of, you know, potentially the parkways, and put forth some recommendation to the village to strengthen protection of the trees, because River Forest is considered a tree city, and let's make sure we can maintain them. So again, I'm here on behalf of a village resident who, again, wants to be involved, but she also is a little, you know, shy. She's recently retired. And
can you share her name?
I will, but not on public record at this point.
And she's willing to help us?
Yes, she is.
Okay, that's great, right? So
she just asked me to explore it, and then somebody, you know, if there's somebody that would, you know, if there's interest, then she would like to partner with somebody.
So any comments?
This makes me so sad. I mean, especially oak trees, they house the most diversity of insects and everything possible. I mean, this just, I can't, I mean, this makes me so sad that somebody wanted to cut down a tree. It's just really, it's terrible. So yeah, I'm all for it with whatever we should be doing. I mean, I take great pains. I have 200-300-year-old oak trees in my yard, and we take great pains to keep them healthy.
So I'm 100% behind the pick here. Trees are something that, you know, from what I did with River Forest tree trails and some other things that I do with trees. So I mean, I would be willing to talk with her, but I would like to have somebody else. I don't know, Carrie or anybody else, because I'm not sure what all it's going to involve. But she might not necessarily have knowledge. I have connections to some people who may have more knowledge on this, so I'd be willing to talk to her, but I'd love to have another commissioner who'd like to.
I would also, so, you know, I would just share that this also happened to me. I live in I'm the steward of an oak savannah. I have 5 mature oaks all over 100. I don't think I get up to 300 like Carrie, but maybe 200. And one thing that I've been reading recently is that there are certain native species, which are called keystone species, and they provide tremendous support to the ecosystem around them. And in our area, that is oak trees. and they should be preserved and treasured just like we treasure our housing stock. In addition to being a tree city, we're a municipal arboretum, which is a pledge to care for our trees. So I would absolutely be interested in. And as I said, because I went through this exact same situation where a neighbor just said, I don't like this limb, and she was going to hire somebody. Unfortunately, she's south of me. So, and the trees are precariously close to both of our houses, I will admit that. But unfortunately, because she's south, about two-thirds of my oak trees were over her yard, and she was going to hire somebody that just came in and cut on the border, like not even, at the base of the, not in the right season and not at the base of the tree. And so $4,000 later, we settled that issue.
A lot of people also don't know that oaks are part of the native ecosystem here, and that actually protecting remnant Oakland that people are trying to do in the Chicago region.
And insects and, all kinds of wildlife.
So are you proposing talking to the woman who is the tree lover, hugger, or to do something? Is that what are you proposing? I'm not sure
throw out a process comment question. So typically when we take on something new, it sounds like on this there's a couple tracks. One is like Carrie's alluding to, is to talk to the residents, kind of get her point of view, understand what her experience was. And then to look at, precedent for this. Is there other local communities that have enacted things like this? If they have, let's reach out and talk to them. Let's find out how they passed it, what they passed. And then we would kind of reconvene and try to come up with a plan. So this is a new project, essentially. When I'm, I feel like for Sustainability Commission, trees are like puppies. Right, like we all love trees. It's literally why I moved here. Especially our old growth trees, our native old growth trees. So what I'm hearing though is Beth's willing to work on it with help. Susan, I didn't know if you said you'd work on it or not, but you chimed in. Carrie, I don't know if you have any bandwidth to help as well.
We would need to limit it to two.
Oh, so we need to limit it to two
Working together at the same time anyway, but
a way to maybe see if we can tap into Village Forestry team,
potentially.
We have those relationships, right? There's Village Forestry, but there's, we also work with, the Arboretum. And
I think Morton Arboretum, I can reach out to them because they have their Chicago Tree Initiative there, and I think they have language for this.
And they have staff, right? They literally have experts.
No, but I think they have templates for protecting trees.
That's awesome. So it could be as easy as them handing us something that's best practice and us.
Right, and I think that's what this woman wants, and I would just modify what you said a bit and said it doesn't matter what her experience is because she's trying to be good neighbors, but what is important is her leveraging this experience to save her trees and others in the community.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess after we talk to her, I think what I hear is an offer to help with some of the
we have a community volunteer who wants to help, and I think she could probably do a lot of the legwork. So, okay, so it sounds like we're all in agreement here that this is something we should take on. And mission one is to talk to the resident.
Then I would just need to have a conversation with the administration and village attorney just to see what kind of regulatory options are available. I do think there's definitely an educational opportunity.
Or do you want to wait till we do some legwork first to just, because we could come up with things, instead of starting from scratch, mm-hmm. we could come up with something that other and then give that to the,
sure.
as we did with the single use.
Okay, so that is important, though, because, it's like, what can we even get away with? Like, can we even pass something?
Right.
Or does this just have to be education? Mm-hmm. Or?
Yeah. Especially
I think it's
the
important to find that
that's
out
probably a good
on parallel tracks.
So mm-hmm. at least we know, what track we're going down.
And would this be specifically just for oak trees, or do we want to look at, other types of trees that are also keystone species?
Yeah, it's any, I would assume, any kind of tree.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Charlotte work on it? Do you want to work on it,
right,
Charlotte?
That the student commissioners don't count towards this.
Yeah, she can work if you want. Do you want to work on it?
I'm really busy this month because AP test and I got to figure out where to go to college. But after May,
after you settle your life.
Charlotte's she's trying to figure out her life right now. So can you lay off a little bit?
In
please?
A month, I would love to work on it, though.
Okay.
We won't be done in a month, no.
Okay, awesome. That's
last question. Who is now the head of forestry just for the who is the head of forestry for the administration now?
Ryan Skozek is a superintendent of okay. Public Works. And he's a certified arborist.
Funded by experts, so that's very nice. All right, thank you for bringing that to our attention, Lisa. That's a good one. Beth?
Since it is 8:30, I think what we should do is I would like to spend just a few minutes confirming the communications calendar, and we can defer the website to next month's
Sounds
meeting.
Good. Thank you.
You know, all I will say about the website is that thanks, Susan. I think we, you know, come up with a bunch of stuff. If people can just look at it before the next meeting, it might enhance our discussion. But at a high level, the goal is just to make the current website more organized. It's basically out of date, and you know, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, and we would work with Sarah, and I just want to get the commission a high level feedback. So that's that. And then the calendar, I forgot to sign into the Zoom meeting. So I will just talk. So for the rest of April, I think this week Sarah is doing something about rain barrels and indoor water saving. And we do need to fill the next more weeks, I think, in April after that. And speaking of trees, found this great thing about something called volcano mulching, if any of you have ever seen that around town or whatever, where the mulch is piled up in, you know, around a tree. Bad because you're basically suffocating the tree, and you know that so that water shoots, and so you're actually mulching the soil. So I think that I'll do a quickie thing on that for the next week. And in fact, separately, I have to talk to you about the fact that a homeowner did some volcano mulching on our block. And so I need the forestry department or somebody to come and fix that or tell the homeowner to fix it because he put it on the parkway trees. But after that, we have another week for the end of April. I was looking for a volunteer to write something about Earth Day. I don't really know if we have any special. I know we haven't planned anything as a commission, but undoubtedly there's something to say about Earth Day, and I could really use some help with that because this week I also need to do the beginning of the monthly newsletter for May. I'm actually a little behind on that, but Sarah and her staff have given me a little grace till Friday to do that. I was going to do it about bicycling, but I'm now wondering if it could be either about the No-Mo May or about new waste contracts. It has to go into effect on May 1st, but we want to publicize some of those things. So I want to get some feedback on, you know, what to do for that first
so
monthly
no-mo,
issue.
So No-Mo
in
May has to still be approved, right?
Oh, true. Okay.
So
we shouldn't.
That's
so
a
that'll be later.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next board meeting is the 20th.
Right. So the very early.
So that's when the waste will be put, the waste contract will put back up, and then no more.
And,
May.
You know, but the village staff will be doing a lot of communications about the waste contract, too. So
okay. So, yeah, I mean, partly is there's just, like, plots to fill in May. So if you'd like me to just stick with the bicycling for May, like we talked about,
that,
I can do that.
Exactly.
That's non-controversial. And so would anybody be willing to volunteer to write a really short, it's just 100 words, something about Earth Day for the week in April?
What's that deadline?
The deadline for that is, it's going to be the Monday of that week. Sorry, I don't.
So it would be Monday the 25th at 8 a.m.
Monday the 25th. What do we say about Earth Day?
Well, you know, it's only 100 words, right? So, you know, you could just do a little, you could either just remind people that it is Earth Day, or you could, you know, look around for some local events. Like I said, I don't, and the village, are we doing an Arbor Day planting?
We are. I just don't have all those. But, and I also don't know if it's going to happen actually on Arbor Day just yet.
And Arbor Day also is an Earth Day.
Yes, it's not the
okay.
same thing,
okay.
but they're around the same time. So I'm just brainstorming. But you know, if you're willing to do it, Carrie, I would appreciate it. And I would just say, you know, if you put in Earth Day, Oak Park, River
Falls, I will.
Or even Chicago, and, you know, it just, it could just be a short thing that kind of reminds people that it is Earth Day and that, you know, here's a couple links to things that you.
I'll try to make it not Doomsday, Earth Day. So
that's hard to do. But,
it's hard to do. And that is the 25th, Monday the 25th is the deadline?
Yeah, at 8 a.m. And just a reminder for the group in general that for the monthly newsletter topics, because there's a lot more production time, the deadline for that is now going to be second Mondays. And so, Maggie, thank you for already planning to do the June one by May 9th. And Jeff, before we leave tonight, I need to get your email because I was, you know, we've talked numerous times about the rooftop solar one for July, and I want to put you in solar, so that one will be due the 2nd of June.
Okay.
You know, for August, we talked about highlighting a local business with sustainable practices, and, you know, if somebody could think about taking that on, that would be great because I'd like to give people a lot of lead time. I won't take any more time on all of the small little weekly topics except to say that there are some open slots for May. So if the NOMO May gets no passed, I can do that for one of the weeks in May. But I'm open to ideas because there are open slots, and it's just like every week, like hamster in a wheel. So I appreciate ideas, and I appreciate help. You know, if we spread it around, it's not that much for people to write 100 words. But, you know, it does take, like, 30 minutes or an hour if you're going to be thoughtful and come up with a catchy headline. So it's really a lot for one person to do. Really need help. And Sarah has been great about stepping in various ways with ideas.
What would be the deadline for the first week of May for a weekly NOMO May?
For a weekly?
Yeah, for the
NOMO
first
May.
Week.
Oh, well, that won't be the first week because the first week is always the monthly piece.
Oh.
So you could do it for the second week.
Okay.
You could
put me down for that because we would know by then.
Are we thinking that the NOMO May is going to go to the April 25th board meeting since
yeah,
that'll be right before
it's
May?
It's
okay. So that would be great.
8 inches.
So
to,
it would be
to work with.
Yeah.
By then.
Yeah, I feel like there's a contest.
Yeah, let's see who can grow the bit longest lawn in May.
We're gonna have a commission. Contest here.
Leave the leaves. We usually do leave the leaves in the fall, don't we?
Yeah, that's in the fall. That deadline.
I mean, leave the leaves in a way is part of NOMO May. It's like just leave.
Yeah.
You know, I could
okay.
include that as part of it because it's
sure.
it's about
it's
not
all part of the same thing.
Yeah, it's about not disturbing the you know the insect
the
world
natural,
until the natural world.
Okay. Well, in the interest of time, I'll stop. But, you know, I appreciate this time on every agenda. And in the May agenda, I'll be probably doing the same thing as asking to fill in the second half
no.
of May. And
so that I had to leave the leaves something to write for the deadline August 29th. On my August,
that,
yeah,
that
August
right.
29th. Was that on your calendar, Beth?
Yes. Yes, it is on my calendar. Leave the leaves, the why and the how, coordinate with Trailside, Carrie.
Yeah.
That's the October monthly piece. So that's 200 to 350 words,
right.
which is really only
yeah.
still a few paragraphs. So the deadline for that will actually be the second Monday in September. So if you have a different exact date, you might want to just look because the staff just.
I think it's good for me to have it early on my calendar. But otherwise, if, you know, then I would get it done. But if I don't know who was talking before, Maggie, was that you? If you would want to do that, that's fine. For that September, leave the leaves.
Maggie's writing the one for June, so.
Okay, I'll continue to write the one for September.
Beth, can you just pass along to me what the deadline is for that second week? Do you know? Is it reset?
The second week of May would be May 9th.
When would you need it? Lead time on that.
This would be for a weekly edition, right?
And would you need a copy for it?
So for May 9th. Sorry. The week of May 9th, so the newsletter would go out on May 12th. We would need it by May 9th at 8 a.m.
Yeah, May 9th is the deadline.
Sorry.
Okay. Beth, anything?
I'm going to stop there in the interest.
I know that you have more, but thank you. So we're going to push communications to the next agenda.
We will have the businesses, how many will show up or how bad we'll get, but so it's possible that that would get pushed again.
I'm going to skip other business too, just for the sake of. So our next meeting is May 10th. Again, our calendar is very predictable, second Tuesday every month. So May 10th is our next meeting. We ran a little bit over, but you know, these meetings used to be like 2+ hours. So I'm glad we're keeping it to at least around 90 minutes, even with the big agenda.
I think we covered a lot of ground, though.
We covered a ton of ground today.
We did not waste time.
Good meeting, very efficient. Thank you for grounding us, Susan. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And a second, please.
I'll second.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We are adjourned. All right. Good meeting.